The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Ugly, nasty, awful markets. We have a government shutdown. Key signals are flashing. And listener questions. All this and much more on episode number 593 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, it's the last week, or about to be the last week, of December 2018. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I'm the host here of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me, especially in this time of investment strife, of worry, concern, and just absolute agony when it comes to portfolios. And we've seen not only portfolios get damaged, deranged, and wrecked, but if you look a little bit closer at some of the internals, stocks are really getting beaten up pretty good. As a matter of fact, if you think about it, just for a moment, think about, man, how bad it was in 2007, 8, 9. Remember those times when things are just getting absolutely just ramrodded? Some things are almost as bad in the last couple of months that we saw back then. I mean, you've seen a lot of things that have been talking about that there's a worst December since 1931. It's going to be the first or the worst year since 2008 overall for the indices if we finished right here, right now. And if you look at some of the individual stock performance, some of the high flyer growth names, how they performed recently, it's pretty ugly. Now, they've come down from a long way up, so some of them are still up for the year. But man, it has been very difficult on a lot of people. And I know that because I get emails from people a lot saying, you know, what are we doing? As a matter of fact, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about the markets that didn't seem to let up at all last week. And we're going to talk about that and some of the directional issues and the velocity of what's going on. But I was thinking about people and watching some commentary on Twitter and the TV and how people were freaking out. And I was thinking about a couple of scenes that I was thinking, well, what happens when people are opening up their online statements for their brokerage account? What are they seeing? And you know, day after day and week after week recently, with this downstroke of the markets. And I was thinking, you know what? There's a scene from the movie The Hangover that kind of came to my mind. And I want to tell me if this is what you think probably makes sense of what people were doing when they opened up their brokerage accounts, looking at things throughout the week.
What the f*** is going on?
Still, am I going to be okay? You're a doctor.
I don't know. Let me look.
See, give me no look at me! Stuart Price! Get your ass back over here!
You got shot!
I know!
The reason why I'm playing these is not to make fun of anybody. That's not the point at all. The point is that we want to make sure that we understand what is happening. And if, in fact, you're in the boat of freaking out, if you're putting that label on yourself, and okay, it's okay to do that. But not for long. Give yourself a certain amount of time and then it's over. And we're going to figure out how to fix some of that in this discussion today. Before we do that, let's do a recap of the markets and talk about what's happening here. So the S&P dropped about 7% for the week. And now we're sitting up sitting on the yearly low. Prices backed up to levels that we saw back in August of 2018. So, you know, a lot of the fluff that we were concerned about, the valuations in some areas in U.S. equities and the relative valuation differential between those and international emerging markets, et cetera, have dissipated. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 7% for the week. The NASDAQ 8.4%. The Russell also was down over 8%. And now The monthly losses for the Dow Jones are 12.1%, the NASDAQ 13.6%, and the Russell is down a whopping 15% for the month. Now, since the 2016 election, I did a little bit of a calculation here. We're now up just over 15% on the S&P 500. If you add in some dividends, it could be probably closer to about 2 years, probably about 20%. However, there was a point that we were as high as 40% from the election date. And that was just in October. So we're talking about a pretty short period of time. It took 23 months or 690 days. Think about that. 690 days of effort and relatively good action with a couple of bumps here and there on the way to get from the point of the election to the high of up 40%. It took 79 days to drop 18% to take out so much of those gains. And that's something that's really important to look at, because if you've heard me talk about this before, one of the things that we know that rallies and uptrends usually are extended over time and move in incremental modes on the way up. However, corrective action, negative market action, has a very fast movement through time. So you get more vertical movement. So rallies, if you think about the angle of the uptrend, is oftentimes, if you use, let's say, a weekly chart, is oftentimes rather, you know, consistent over time. And you can see the peaks and valleys in there and some of the ups and downs and variations of what's happening. But when you see corrections, oftentimes that angle is so much sharper. It's much more difficult because a lot of fear. Because when people have fear about losing money, they do some crazy things. They sell things at prices that they shouldn't. They make moves on areas they shouldn't. They don't actually buy like they were doing before, of course. Therefore, there's no support in any of the markets. And when you get into an area like we are now, where it's happening so quickly, you're getting punched in the face over and over, punched in the body over and over, kicked in the ankles over and over. What do? The first thing is fight or flight. And you just are out of there. So some of this is going on right now. We could blame it on a lot of things. We could blame it on the continuing trade war, the skirmish, the kerfuffle, whatever you want to call it, and the results from the midterm elections. You know, we had pretty much the height of the markets coincided pretty well with the date that, or the time period that the midterm elections happened, and where we're going to no longer have a very cooperative government. And we're already seeing that with the government shutdown that's going on right now. Partial shutdown. But that doesn't really tell the whole story, right? All these things that are happening here, we knew that this was in the market for a while. Nobody seemed to care about it. We knew that there was going to be the benefit of good economic backdrop. And even though the Fed was going to be raising rates over time, okay, we could deal with that. The problem is when you put this all together, and when you mashed this all together in a recipe for disaster, frankly, where you have trade wars that there really is no good plan that I can see that is at all in place. It's just a battle. Battle to see who will give in first, because nobody has a plan. And then on top of that, you have an increasing interest rate environment where we're at a point that it makes sense to a degree for some people to say, the hell with the stock market. I'm going to take my money and I'm going to put it over in a CD for 3%. And on top of that, liquidity coming out of the markets on a regular basis, because the Fed is trying to normalize their balance sheet, trying to normalize interest rates over time. And all this coming together is not good. So we got political instability. We got problems with trade wars. We have the fact of the government being now divided. That's a problem. But again, this doesn't tell the whole story when we just look at the markets. Because when we look at all of this together and we look at the stocks and how they've reacted, while the S&P may be down 10% or 9.5% for the year, let's take a look at, for example, the peak to trough numbers on a variety of stocks. I took just a bunch of stocks at random. I threw them into an Excel spreadsheet, looked at the 52-week high. Check this out. Netflix is down 42% from its high. Amazon down 33%. Google down 23%. Facebook 43%. Procter & Gamble 6%. That's pretty good comparatively. Goldman Sachs is down 42%. Home Depot down 26%. Verizon 11%. Caterpillar 31%. Apple 36%. Hartford Financial Services Company down 29%. Kellogg, you know them, they're down 23%. Transocean down 55%. That's a energy company. ExxonMobil down 24%. And this is a very interesting consideration when you think about how much more damage individual securities get in market downturns. Now, at the same time, we got to tell you the good side here. It's not all bad. Netflix is still up 28% for the year. Amazon is still up 17% for the year. Got a few others in here, one or two. Verizon is up 3% for the year. Procter & Gamble's flat on the year. But the rest of the names are hurting. However, they were up for a while. This downstroke obviously took them down, whereas you see Facebook now down 29% for the year to date. Goldman Sachs down 37%. Home Depot down 15%. Caterpillar down 23%. So the list goes on and on and on. You know, the ever wonderful Apple that everybody said, no, that's what you got to own, is now down 11% year to date. Microsoft now took over the top spot for the company with the best, the biggest market capitalization. So here we are in a situation that we have indices getting slammed, but at the same time, and I think more importantly, anybody that owned individual stocks really got obliterated over the last few weeks. And that really, I think, gives us a moment that we have to think about, what were we thinking? I think everybody that I've talked to recently said, you know, I know things were really high and, you know, I probably should have taken some money off the table, but it just seemed like it would go on forever. Again, I don't want to get ahead of myself because we have an area, a section today that I want to talk about that in depth. Put that on the back burner just for a moment. But we have these same reasons that stocks have been in trouble recently about, that we knew about some time ago. It finally came. We didn't believe it was going to come for a lot of people. I'm a little surprised at how vicious this has been. I thought we'd have some bumpiness, then we'd have a straightening out through the end of December, and then 2019 was going to be the problem time, which I think still will be. But what has been happening? What we're seeing now is what is classically referred to as a negative feedback loop. We haven't really heard that for a while. As a matter of fact, I don't really remember talking about that at all in any discussion, probably for, 5, 6, 7 years. Because we haven't had this. We haven't had a situation where this conversation has gone through the same gyrations of, oh my God, you know what? The reality is here. Bad politics and bad decision-making processes and rate increases and what happens to the retail buyer, and look what's happening to the retail and what's happening with home builders. And this whole negative feedback loop is continuing to build very strong. And it begs the question, doesn't it? Is it kind of a chicken or egg quandary? Here's the question I want you to consider. Does the stock market correction cause a recession, or does a recession cause a stock market correction? Does that make sense? What I'm wondering here is, and what I think we need to consider, is whether or not there is this idea that, you know, stock markets that move down cause a negative feedback loop that makes people maybe not want to buy certain things, that makes companies hold back on CapEx expenditures, that makes the entire economy slow down, that eventually turns into a recession? Or is it that for whatever reason, the numbers are lining up in a certain way, that there is a potential for a recession on the horizon? And as such, stock markets and stocks and investors act accordingly to revalue stocks in their portfolio at a much lower multiple because growth will be slowing. Therefore, the idea of a recession causes a stock market correction. And during a recession, you have stocks and stock markets that go down. So which came first? I have no idea. It appears to me that we're talking ourselves into a recession right now. That's what it appears to me. Even though I did believe, and I do believe, that this pull forward effect is going to impact us very substantially going into 2019. You know, I've talked about that so many times, and I'm sticking to that discussion. But it does appear that this latest market move, probably that was, I would say this whole thing has really gotten out of hand because of the fact of the inability for our government to handle this trade war very well. A lot of missteps, a lot of, I would say, false comments that were brought to the fore that really spooked markets. I think that when we had some commentary from the White House and from advisors and from various government officials that, you know, we think we're getting towards a really good place when it comes to, you know, our China relations. And after that meeting at the G20, where it was said that, yeah, well, things are going pretty well and we're going to have something done, when factually there wasn't anything that was substantial. Yeah, China bought some soybeans and they're coming in to possibly reduce down the tariffs on automobiles from 40% to 15%. But that's not a deal. That's just a concession. And now that we have a date, March 1st, for when this whole deal needs to happen or else more sanctions, more tariffs go into place. And on top of that, you have Navarro coming out last week and saying, hey, I don't think we're going to be able to do this by March 1st. Doesn't look like a good timeline. What that tells me is that nobody's talking to each other. And you know what? I think investors rightfully are saying, you know what? We're revolting. If you can't give us the straight information about this, we have no sense on how we are supposed to respond. And why would we invest in companies that could be damaged by your missteps and by your policy flaws and bear the brunt of financial loss? So I think investors are acting accordingly. But now what's happening is this is all occurring at a very bad time of year. If this season is the Christmas season, the holiday season, where people do a lot of their spending for gifts and in the retail area, and if maybe they're pulling back due to the fact that they're concerned about what's happening with their portfolios and their 401ks and markets and instability around the world, and they just kind of look around and say, oh, you know what? I'm not feeling as great as I felt, even though gas prices are lower at the pump. Even though they may have more wages because of the wage increases that we've recently seen. And even so, even because they may think about the fact that, you know, I'm probably going to get a better tax rate this year and maybe I'll get some money back. All that flies right out the window when we have the fight or flight scenario build up in our system. And that is occurring with these current markets. And I think there is the potential that while I didn't necessarily believe we would see a recession, an actual recession, a GDP, negative GDP in 2019 in the beginning, or even in the middle, I thought that maybe a little bit further out. I did see a marked slowdown, of course, just repeating that. I don't want to step on myself here. I want to make sure I'm clear. A marked slowdown in the beginning towards, I would say, the end of the first quarter, somewhere in the middle to the end of first quarter, because of all the things we've talked about. But really, the slowdown in GDP from the 3.4 that we recently saw just last week, and the high confidence we have in the manufacturing, all the things that are in place right now until all the tariffs really start to kick in. And even if the tariffs are relieved for a while, it's going to have a long-lasting impact on the cost of goods and the economy in general. So what appears to be happening is that markets are reacting in such a way that they really are starting to believe this and talking themselves into a recession. So I think in this scenario that we're looking at here, I think markets are either the chicken or the egg, whichever one you want to look at, but it's the leader in where a recession may come in and why there is the chance now, a much higher likelihood of recession earlier in the scheme of things, possibly in 2019, if in fact we continue with all these policy missteps. And if that's the case, markets are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So while there's so much more damage in the indices here in the U.S., this is something that we've talked about also a few times, and where my concerns were with relation to the growth names. That list I read a moment ago, the 52-week highs and the change recently from those highs, if you notice, the biggest changes came from the go-go growth names. You know, the Netflix down 42%, where Procter & Gamble was only down 6%. We see Facebook down 43%, whereas when we look at, you know, for example, a Verizon, only down 11%. So the value side of the equation has held up much better. Now, they're both down. They're both disastrous. You know, if you look at any of these particular date ranges from the beginning of the year, whatever, not good. However, back in October, we had discussed in my quarterly newsletter that we send to clients and that I offer to you as well, a scenario where we were thinking that, back to the beginning of the year, we were concerned with growth names. And we talked about this. Now, let me just stick to the growth names first, and I'll tell you about what happened next. Since October, the October high, growth is down 20%, value is off by 15%. Okay, 5% better. That's better. Okay, but still not good. But value is definitely holding up much better because it's been beaten up for so long. And this is why I have been talking about rotational process into value over growth, scraping your profits from your growth-oriented trades and putting into the value area. And looking at, for example, in our investology portfolios in concept, depending on what portfolio it is and what risk factor and time horizon, and Horowitz and Company's global allocations, we slanted more towards value at the beginning of this year. It's starting to pay off now, finally. We were definitely early with that. Now, another thing that I talked about in October now, so this was a few months ago, I talked about the value versus growth. In October, I had talked about my concerns about the potential for this terrible outsized performance and valuation on a relative basis of U.S. stocks compared to emerging market stocks and compared to foreign stocks. This is a big issue. This is a big concern of mine. And I wrote in a discussion that I thought that we are going to possibly have some outperformance in the emerging markets and foreign due to a few reasons. And I mentioned this a few times. We actually increased our exposure for our clients in emerging markets, reduced our U.S. equity exposure. This is what's really interesting, I thought. Since the October high, the S&P is down 17.5% or so. Emerging markets, down 10%. Now, you would think that with a market sell-off like we've seen, that there would have been a significant benefit to being in the higher quality area, like U.S. versus emerging. But that wasn't the case. Emerging, and this happened before, emerging seems to go down first and then up first. So the U.S. lags. We saw this back in 2008 with China. China had a head start on us. And their market started rising considerably sooner than our markets did here. And they came out of those doldrums much sooner. But we wrote about this idea that I had, this speculation that I had on how there could be some benefits to equities outside of the U.S. And this is discussed in terms of potential dollar weakening, and some thought that this could be happening for a variety of reasons. That's how I kind of put it together. Because if the dollar started weakening, I thought, well, that could really benefit emerging markets. That's a big chunk of their recent slide has been dollar strength. So I thought, well, maybe there could be a credit downgrade in the U.S. because we have so much spending going on and much lower tax receipts happening, that's possible. We could see this really hurting the dollar. It could be possibly the fact that the U.S. is forced to cut spending because of this. It could be also that there is the potential for instability with the government and problems with the, the fact that the dollar has been so strong for so long, and maybe there's going to be a trade out of it due to the fact that there's some concern about the stability of our government. Whatever it may have been, we did start to see this roll. And in fact, this has been beneficial on a relative basis to the emerging markets. I said that it could be an important moment for, this is what I'm going to read what I said. It could be an important moment for global markets, eventually leveling the playing field and benefiting non-US equities after some initial chaos. And I went on to talk about how that if the US dollar is supported, that would not be good on a relative basis for stocks outside the US. It would probably be okay right now for here. But as we can see, as it appears on a relative basis, some of this is starting to play out pretty significantly. So where are we now? What's happening? That's a good question. But I want to ask you something more importantly. How are you doing? Not how are you doing in the markets. I'm not talking about that for a second here. I'm talking about how are you doing? How's your head? Are you freaking out? I mean, just going like off the walls? Is it ruining your weekend, ruining your week, ruining your month? I want to do a exercise with you because I think it's an important time that we stop for a second, take a break, take a breath, reflect, and consider really what's happening here, how you're impacted emotionally, physically, mentally, and what that means. And if in fact you are going to make some very bad decisions due to your emotional state. So here's what I want you to do. It's going to be a little weird, but we can get weird, right? Markets are getting weird, and you probably have a heart rate that's high during the day if you're watching things. If you just simply look once per day, you probably have a blood pressure level that goes up. You could be totally freaking out. Whatever the story is, whatever the situation is, I know you're not totally happy. Now, listen, I'm sure there's somebody listening out there right now that's 100% out, 100% in cash, has been just sitting on the sidelines for a while. This is going to be for you too. There's people that maybe had some significant amount of puts on the market or maybe riding the VIX or short as can be. And you're pretty happy right now. But you know what? This is for you also. Because there's probably been a time when you were freaking out. Don't forget that you've only been really in good shape if you've been short since about October or so after that. But in between that, there's been a lot of volatility, a lot of gyrations, a lot of emotional upheaval because markets have been not just simply going down. They're just wild and volatile. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to talk about how you're feeling right now. Just go somewhere, hide, go to a closet, go to a bathroom, somewhere into your car, somewhere where nobody can hear you, okay? And I want you to say out loud how this is impacting you. Don't worry about getting it right, you know, saying the exact right words. Just start talking. Maybe you should listen to what I'm going to tell you to do first, then do this, okay? Maybe then rewind this and then do this. So I want you to start just thinking, okay, how am I feeling? How am I mentally dealing with this? What am I thinking? It could be anything. I don't want to give you too many ideas, but it could be, oh my God, I know these things happen. I'll deal with it. To, oh my God, I'm scared out of my mind. I don't know what to do. To, oh my God, I'm going to die. I mean, I don't know, anything in between. But I want you to just talk it out loud. Talk about what's going on, how it's impacting you, how it's impacting your relationships, how it's impacting your thinking, decision-making. I want you then to think about this and how you're feeling now. And try to remember sometimes in the past that you also felt this way. There have been times, maybe in recent, maybe been years ago. If you're very new to the market and you just decided to go in the last year, then maybe you have no history. That's okay. Think about what it is that you're feeling. And the reason why I'm bringing up feelings here, when I usually try to say take feelings out of the equation, because I think we need to resolve what's going on with you and how you're dealing with this. Because this isn't funny. When you have a stock that's down 40-something percent, maybe you're only down 20% on it because you caught some of the upside, then it came down on you, and you're still holding it, you have to make a decision. What am I going to do? It may be simply nothing, and you're okay with it. Then again, it could be I'm out of this thing and I'll find a better day to get into it. But then we have to wonder what is going to be that decision making that gets you back in. So I want you to think about how you're feeling. Think about how you felt this way in the past and when you felt this way in the past. And then what I want you to do is think about your life today, now, and in the future. And I want you to go down a negative path again, you know, not this, oh my God, I lost 20% of my portfolio and, you know, it's going to keep on going down. And if it goes down, what's going to happen is I'm not going to have a retirement. If I don't have a retirement, what's going to happen is I'm not going to be living in the street. If I'm living in the street, I'm going to have to go on welfare and all that. If I go on welfare, oh my God, who knows what's going to happen? And maybe blah, blah, blah. And then it's going to end in death. I'm dying. So what happens is that your mind will short circuit all that and just say, oh my God, my portfolio is down 20%. I'm going to die. All this stuff in the middle, the rational or irrational points don't seem to make it into the final verdict of my portfolio is down, I'm going to die. But really, what's the worst can happen here? What's the worst? You'll have less money. You've had less money before. You're okay then probably. And I'm thinking that over time, things actually got better for you. Now, if you're in this game for the long haul and you've been doing this for a while, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You also know that I am not Mr. Bull Market. I'm not bullish. I'm not always bearish. Right now, I'm neutral. And I'll give you a hint for a moment. I'm a little bit more towards the bullish for the short-term trader right now. Now, I want you to continue with this and maybe even write some of this down. Maybe just jot some of this down because I want you to be able to reflect on this. You know, store it in a little note somewhere under something in a drawer that you can pull out in the future. Then let's consider what we know right now. So already we're talking about all the things that could happen, all the things how we're feeling, the way we felt like this in the past. What's the worst that can happen? And then let's talk about some reality. What we know. We know market corrections happen. Now, if you don't know market corrections happen, you should not be investing. Let's just get that straight right now because we've had many market corrections. I've been doing this 30-something years, and I've seen plenty of corrections. And I got to tell you, every single one of them feels like this is the worst ever. Every single one of them. This is the worst. Can't get any worse. How could it get any worse? So right now what's happening is we're in a situation where here we are, that there is this, you know, correction happening, and well, it's the worst ever. They're always going to be the worst ever. And for many investors, it's time in the market, not timing the market, that is the way to long-term success. Again, different strokes for different folks, different ways of investing, different processes. But here's the thing. This is something I was told 30 years ago, and it's very hard to swallow. I'll tell you the way that it makes sense, and I'll tell you the way that it was described to me back then. Basically, here's the bottom line, that oftentimes when you're feeling the worst, when you're feeling that gut-wrenching feeling like, oh my God, it's just going to go on like this forever, and then it's just going to be awful and terrible, that's usually the best time to think about starting to put money into the markets. Because everybody is just selling things with abandon, and not worrying about prices, saying, just dump it, just get rid of it. And they don't really care. They're not slowly and methodically looking at, okay, this thing's at $12. If it hits to $11.50, I'm out and, you know, do that. It's getting out $11.50. Okay, that's fine. You know what? Let's think about maybe adding some first and then keeping our stop at $11.40. You know, whatever the technique is that you're using. If they're just saying out, done, sell, market order, done, sell in the morning, I'm done. There's opportunity because it's price inefficiency. And what we know is that this is oftentimes a good time if you have a long enough time horizon to think about picking up on some of those price inefficiencies. Now, the way it was told to me years ago was something like this. You know, if you're really upset with me and you're upset about your portfolio and you're just so pissed off that you just want to throw a rock through my window, right before you do that, take a check, write it out for $10,000, tie it around the rock, throw it in the window, and I'll make sure to invest for you at that point in time. I don't remember who told me that, but somebody said that to me once upon a time. And I think it makes some sense. Again, I do believe that there are a lot of problems in the markets. At the same time, you know, we have to understand that excessive drops in the market, this vertical movement through time, are due to overspeculation during the good times when money has to come out. Now, the other thing that I've been harping on for how long is the idea that when we do see a market correction, it will be exacerbated due to the fact that everybody is investing in these passive ETFs, thereby pulling out full market chunks with every dollar that they sell. And the inefficiencies that are going to happen in individual equities because of that. And I really do believe that this latest bout of market volatility has a good chunk to do with the fact that all these ETFs that have been praised by everybody as the only way to invest, why bother doing research? Throw it into the S&P 500. You're starting to see some ripples in that thesis. And I still believe that there's, you know, potential for a lot of people that if they're going to just sell. So if you have somebody that has five stocks, they sell those five stocks. If they have one S&P ETF, they sell the whole ETF. And 500 stocks are sold. And smaller increments and smaller prices, I get that. But it's still the potential, which I think that everybody was sticking their heads not up their tuchuses, but in the sand, or but maybe both, thinking that this is never going to have any problems. The ability to sell at any given moment during the day, that's not going to have a problem because we can package all these deals into one, and the amount of money that was put into ETFs over these years, you know. Now, on the other hand, we're probably going to have a big rebalance between robo-advisors, traditional rebalancing, pensions and profit sharing plans, et cetera, you're going to see a big rebalance in the beginning of January. Stocks being down as much as they are will yield the fact that they'll be sold. You'll see selling from bonds put back into equities if none of the composition of the portfolio changes to bring up the level of the stock to where it's supposed to be. So I know things like rates are moving up, stocks are not as favorable, but we still have a very favorable corporate tax environment, and that is not going away anytime soon. We have the trade war worries and probably going to see slower economic conditions. People are nervous, and when that happens, it's not really a good thing, especially, again, when this time is of year is happening. We know that quality is probably important in times like this, and you can reset. And instead of looking to hit a home run right now, start thinking about making some singles, making sure that you're diversified. Don't freak out. So if in this process you're talking about, oh man, I'm freaked out, I'm out, I'm done, I'm not doing this anymore, the hell with this, probably the worst thing you could do, because you're dealing with emotions, you're dealing with an unstable mental state, not thinking rationally. And I'm not saying just hold on for dear life either. Let's get this clear. I want to make sure I make a statement right now. If you're not comfortable with your current portfolio or the potential of losing money in the future at any amount at all, maybe you shouldn't be investing. Maybe you should not have an market exposure. That's first. Second, if in fact you're so worried that you're losing sleep, you can't eat, you're freaking out, you're just inconsolable, you can't work, you just, maybe it's not a good time for you either. But if you could step back for a second, go through this exercise and realize that, okay, I shouldn't freak out. If I can't take the pressure, maybe what I'll do here is I'll just simply go. And what I'm going to do is I am going to rebalance my portfolio appropriately using the risk tolerance time horizon that I should have done to the begin with, because maybe I didn't have the right risk tolerance on my portfolio. Sometimes out of the wreckage comes some goodness. Question whether you're too greedy. What mistakes did you make? Did you think that this rally was going to go on forever? And if you did, do you now think that the sell-off is going to go on forever? Let's think about that. This is key. For a while, everybody said, nothing's going to hurt this market. This market is Teflon. You could throw a trade war at it. You could throw interest rate increases. It's not going anywhere. Of course, in the back of everybody's mind, they're like, I can say that, but I don't know if I necessarily believe that. But yet, people get throwing money at it. Netflix. Yeah, we like Netflix. Great company because we love what they do and all that. But their valuation, but who cares? Just keep on throwing money at it. It's not going to come down because every time it's come down, it's gone right back up. So let's not worry about it. So if we were in that mindset that there was nothing that could happen, that this was, a bulletproof market and there was just nothing that would be able to take it down, and we were just so positive about it, but now we're thinking just the opposite. Oh my God, there's nothing that can help this market. Nothing. It's never going to get better. It's going down to zero. Think about the two extremes there and why you're thinking these extremes are possible. Do you have risk management on your positions? Ask yourself that. Are you too heavily weighted in those positions that are getting slammed and maybe you decided I'm not going to sell no matter what? That could be beneficial long term, but is it affecting you to a point that you're not making good decisions on the rest of your portfolio? Again, think again. What's the worst that can happen? I mean, of course, you can move to a CD or cash. You could take some time out, time off. Say, I'm taking a time out here. I just can't deal with this. If I can't deal with the heat in the kitchen, I'm getting out for a little while. But, before you do that, before you take an all-out position or even partially out, what's your plan? If you're selling at the low point, it may also put you in it's kind of a frenzied state of mind of, I'm out, I'm not getting back in, I don't want to get hurt again. If I put money in, then what happens if it goes down? Then I'm going to have to take it out again. I don't want to do it, so I'm not going to do it. So you got to be careful on how all of this process affects you. And again, you can rebalance, like probably the best idea. If you really think logically about it, unemotionally, and you're looking at somebody else's portfolio and they say to you, hey, listen, here I am for the long haul. I'm 45 years old. I have 20 years till I retire or so. What's the best place to put my money? Well, okay, there's a lot of different options, but one of them being market-oriented investments. What we can do now at this point is look at your portfolio, create this diversification like we do at Investology and Horowitz & Company Global Allocations. And now what we're looking at is, we had an underexposure to U.S. equities. We just lifted our emerging market equities. We have an oversized position in cash compared to what we usually have. This is something that we've been working on over the last year or so. And maybe it's time, or maybe not right now, but maybe what we want to do is if things get really bad with the domestic side, take a look at that. Maybe take a little bit out of our bond exposure that did really well and then rotate it back into the equity positions towards the low of the positions. And the other thing you can do is get some outside advice because I got to tell you, you don't have to do this alone. You don't have to suffer through this. If you're freaking out about this, I would really encourage you to go out and find a qualified advisor. It doesn't have to be us. It could be anybody. Go out and find somebody that can actually give you some help. Yeah, we're here. Am I going to talk you through trying to keep you in the market and keep, you know, hold you by the ankles and make sure that you don't do anything stupid? Maybe, maybe not. Depends on really what your risk tolerance is, time horizon, what your goals are. But maybe it is a smart thing to stay in, and maybe that's what you need. Maybe that's why, a little plug here for a second, that's why advisors get paid some money. That's why doing it yourself maybe not is the best idea for all this. While things are fine, and the longer the markets go up, the more it seems like, ugh, what do I need to pay this guy to do that for? The fact is that, you know what, clients were a little concerned at the beginning of the year, and we were too, that we were kind of underweighted in equities. Now, they're thrilled. We were a few months in advance of all this, but it worked out just as good for clients as we had, you know, looked at this whole thing and as we, not expected, but as we thought it was going to be. So there we go. So here's the question I want to ask after all this process. If you had 100% money in cash right now, all your investable assets, all of it in cash right now, it's been that way for a while, not just from yesterday, like, I don't know, 2 years. Ask yourself this question. What would I do now if I was all in cash? And what does that look like for me? There's plenty of time from now through the end of the year to really think about this and to go through the different emotional conditions that arise, how you're going to handle this. And of course, we've seen a lot of sharp sell-offs historically. This is one of the steep ones that really gets people unnerved and seems not to give anybody any breathing room or time to think. And that's why I want you to stop for a second. Don't do anything. Well, again, I'm not giving you a recommendation on your investments. Don't do anything out of fear and panic. Think through it and think what is the most logical thing to do with this, you know, because this is probably why we're seeing a run for the hills mentality, sell first, ask questions later kind of thing happening in the market, especially towards the end of last week. And I'm going to tell you something. If you could try to be somewhat less emotional with your decision-making process, but at the same time, understanding that emotions go into the decision-making process and discounting that to a degree so that you can be clear to think and to make that decision properly, you're going to be a lot better off. Now, with that in mind, I want to mention something. You know, we've told you this before. We have a variety of different indicators I use internally. We have them also over on TradeStation that we have for access through their trading app store. But there is some sentiment indicators that we use. And let me tell you, they are flashing some pretty oversold readings right now. They're consistent with what I've seen before of near-term reversals. Now, of course, markets can get more oversold and people can get more panicked, and they can be, especially with this weird setup in the next week or so with half days for Christmas and, you know, the new year coming in. And we do have this odd kind of market that's going to be going on with closed days and all that. But if I were a kind of a betting man, so to speak, I think there's a good chance that we could see a bit of a bounce to clear some of these dreadful oversold signals. These levels that between, there's the McClellan as an example of one, the Spearman as another, our KRI, the key reversal indicator. These are all really at these real low points that historically have been within a couple of days, a point where you may see a significant bounce. Now, again, with Monday being a half day, I'm not exactly sure how that plays. But if, in fact, there was a downstroke on Monday, with the idea that the government's closed Monday, closed Tuesday, and really with this government shutdown, that gives them a couple of extra days to kind of, you know, think through this and try to get something done. And if we get a clearing of the government reopening, and at least if nothing else, an extended order to keep the government open temporarily till we get a full budget, and then it just goes from there, you know, the continuing resolution that they do. I think that will do one piece of the clearing puzzle. And I was not expecting this kind of market condition until the first part or the first half of next year. And I'm not giving up on that either. I don't think necessarily we're going to have a good market condition next year. Okay. And my idea was we were going to stay long into the end of this year. And then starting next year, start building up a major hedge position. And as we have done already, reduce down our equity positioning to some of the lowest levels we've had in a very long time in our global allocations and investology. So I think that when we look at this situation here right now, we do have a deeply oversold trading opportunity that may take a couple of days to appear. But if we see a big downstroke on Monday, I'll probably put a couple of bucks down on our trading portfolios, and I'll probably add some for myself. Aside from that, into a long position, thinking that the government probably is wanting, they're not going to want to open up the next week with a closed, or begin next week, which is really Wednesday, of markets with the closure. So we got all these things going on, all these cross currents, a lot of exercise for you to participate in. And then finally, let me get this here. Give me a moment. And finally, we have some listener questions coming in. I mentioned from now to the end of the year, and this is pretty much it. This is the end of the year. We had people go over to Ask Andrew on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And over there, I said, hey, ask me some questions. We'll put them on the air. And we'll randomly pick one guest or one question, not a guest, one question each week. And I'll send you a book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, where I go over emotional issues and fundamental analysis and technical analysis and quantitative analysis and mutual funds and ETFs and technical patterns and all that. You can get the audio book, by the way, over at audible.com, over at amazon.com, which owns Audible. But that's available for you if you want to listen to me a little bit longer and give you some more insights into markets, education, etc. But we have two questions that came in today. This first question came in from Stan Sullivan. He says, Andrew, quick question. Does mutual fund ticker VDADX belong in a non-retirement account for tax efficiency? And he told me some other personal details about him, which we're going to not talk about, but I'm not mentioned on the air. But so this is the Vanguard Dividend Appreciation Index Fund. And I don't really understand why this wouldn't. I looked at the fund and I don't see that why there's any reason that in a non-retirement account that it could be good. Now, the problem that you have here is it tax efficient? Well, you have the dividends. That's the point there, the dividends. So you may have a dividend yield of 2-4%, depending on where you are in time and year, and you have some things that go on. So is it the most tax efficient? Maybe, maybe not. You know, there are some ETFs that are possibly more tax efficient than a mutual fund, but I don't necessarily think this is a bad idea. Again, it all depends on what you're trying to accomplish here, but this is a dividend appreciation index fund. So in other words, those companies that are giving dividends, increasing their dividends, have a good history of dividends will be in this particular fund with the idea that, you know, get a little bit more stability because there is some dividends being paid. The next question comes from Tyler Gizzy, and he says, hey, Andrew, Tyler here from Bedford, Texas. Hope all is well with you and you're having a wonderful holiday season. Thank you. My question is not about the interest rate hikes, but more about an underlying issue of them unwinding the balance sheets every month. Can you explain what this does to the market and the long-term effect that will cause if they go through and increase it? So what Tyler's talking about here, this is a great question, is the idea that the Fed has had, you know, the quantitative easing program, which are now going through a quantitative tightening program because they're unwinding it. What they're doing is not really necessarily actively going and, you know, undoing it. But as the bonds they purchase roll off, they mature, they're not buying them back. So therefore, they're not about $50 billion a month. And that's not going back into the system in terms of liquidity. So each and every month, we're losing $50 billion a month of liquidity, theoretically, which is the equivalent of tightening. So it's not as outwardly evident as you would see with a tightening when they say, hey, we're raising interest rates by 25 basis points. However, what it does is it creates a tightening process behind the scenes. So each time they do this, it's probably a small tick, you know, a little bit here and there. So when you go throughout the year, it may be the equivalent of a 50 basis point hike through the end of the year. I don't know if there's some people have analyzed this, looked at this, and come up with what the actual equivalent is. But whatever the number is, it is a tightening. So yes, they're doing two things. They're raising rates and they're doing a quantitative tightening by not putting back the maturing bonds into their portfolio. They're not buying them back like they were doing for some time. So there you go. All right, let's mix these up. Let's look the other way. Let's not look. I'm not looking. I'm going to mix them up. Okay, here we go. I'm pulling this one. Tyler from Bedford, Tex. You win. So do me a favor, Tyler, if you're listening, send me your address. Go over to Ask Andrew and just send me your address, and I will send you a copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. We're going to have a best of, I think, next week, and then we're going to come back at the beginning of the year. We're going to have some cool stuff. I have some great little things that we pulled out for a best of throughout the year of 2018, and we'll talk some more. But if you have any questions, you can always get to me over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just go to the Ask Andrew section, click that button real quickly, and send me a message. I appreciate it. If, for whatever reason, you want me to take a look at your portfolio because you're freaking out and you want some advice on what it can do, go there as well. Just let me know what's going on. We'll hook up. We'll talk. We'll figure out what's going on. Or if you want to check out our Investology offering, go over there to Investology with an E, E-N-V-E-S-T-O-L-O-G-Y, Investology. I think I spelled that right. Go check that out, and you can find out more about that that hybrid robo slash, you know, advisor crafted and technology enhanced process that we have. And until next week, I wish you well. A Merry Christmas for everybody who is celebrating. For you and your family, a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. Don't let all this get you down. It's just part of the process. We'll get it back going. We'll figure out what to do. The two of us, the three of us, all of us together. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.